This episode is presented by Invest Puerto Rico. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place.
Hello, and welcome back to Equity, a podcast about the business of startups, where we unpack the numbers and nuance behind the headlines. I'm Marianne Azevedo, and this is our interview show, where we sit down with a guest, think about their work, and unpack the rest. Today, we're joined by Hans Tung, managing partner at Notable Capital, formerly GGV Capital, a change we'll get to later in the show. It's a firm focused on investing in the U.S. as well as in Europe, Israel, and Latin America. Hans, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Marianne. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Today, we're talking about a number of topics, including Hans' thoughts on the overall investment landscape, why down rounds are not such a bad thing, what's going on in the world of fintech, which has had a little bit of a rough start to the year, venture capital as a whole, where we're seeing lots of musical chairs going on, and more. Let's get started. Last year, I had the pleasure of interviewing you on Equity, and one of the things that we discussed was down rounds, which for a while seemed like they were almost an evil phrase, but became much more accepted, I guess, in 2023. At the time, you said you felt like down rounds were okay. And in fact, you know, not necessarily a bad thing, especially when faced with either shutting a company down or raising a round at a lower valuation. Are you still thinking that this year? What are you seeing when it comes to valuation?
Yeah, every time someone asks me the question about down round, I think of that episode in Silicon Valley where the founder realized, wait, if I just raise more money a down round, I will still have my company, still have to shut it down. It's a classic. You know, I've been in this business for almost 20 years, and we're long-term in the way we approach things. I always know that it doesn't matter about the markups. This is like getting a report card or getting a test exam score. It doesn't really matter until you actually have an exit. Mm-hmm. IPO is actually just a milestone, not the end game. IPO is the beginning for public investors to be along for the ride. So you think longer term, the valuation up or down temporarily doesn't matter as much as generating a big outcome at the end. And one thing I like about being in Silicon Valley is that you can be a lot of fun, be quite founder friendly. So when things are going well, when major milestones are being reached, you can always create an optional refresher for the founders or the management team that have performed through tough times. So I just view down round as something that's more temporary. And as investors, if you end up getting a good outcome, you have exits, you have DPI, you have distribution, ultimately that's how you're judged by our LPs. So I think that whatever it takes to scale the business is what the company and the founders and board need to focus on of doing to manage the business the best they can every step of the way.
Yeah, well, I guess, again, like if the alternative is down round or shutdown, I think if I were a founder, I would probably also choose a down round. But speaking of shutdowns, I have read or I interviewed Roger Lee from layoffs.fyi, and this was a couple of maybe a month or two ago. I lose track of time. And one of the things that he shared with me was a startling statistic. Shutdowns were up by like 70%, startup shutdowns, mm-hmm. in 2023 compared to the year before. Are you seeing that as well? Or is that reflective of the market? Or one of the things I was thinking just before I let you answer is there were so many more startups founded during the boom times of 2020 and 2021. So that it kind of makes sense that we're seeing more shutdowns overall. But anyway, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, Roger's very smart and thoughtful VC. And I love having him on the board of StockX. I mean, his stats are correct. I think that what founders don't realize is that this choice is not between shutting down and do a down round. Because in that situation, you will choose a down round every single time. The challenge is when you are faced with the prospect of holding on to your valuation or raise a down round, if you don't do it, you run the risk of shutting down later. By the time you're close to shutting down, no one's going to be investing in you.
Yeah,
it's
that
going to
makes
be
sense.
Very, very hard, as you know.
That's a pretty straightforward decision, right?
Exactly. So yeah. The top bar is, do you wait or do you try to continue to grow? Keep your growth rate up, even if you're burning money, just to prop the valuation up and not have any negative signals in the market. A lot of founders tend to choose to keep on going because they worry that they will make them look back. If they're still down, they will do a riff.
I see.
And my point is that you should do that to bring your cash flow management to a better alignment of where the business at right now. And if it means that you have to do a down round because your growth slowed and you had a riff, that's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
A lot of founders are not as okay with that scenario. It's like a mission of defeat. And to me, it's not at all. It's a temporary adjustment and you need to step back in order to spring forward later. That's the hard part for most founders, especially young founders, to realize.
Yeah, it's kind of like letting go of that pride of, okay, it's okay if we raise at a lower valuation. Better to do that than potentially risk losing the company later. I hear you.
Yeah.
So overall, though, the investing landscape, how different is it so far this year compared to last?
I think it's a continuation of what we see in the second half of 2023. We're still seeing some down rounds happening in the market. Obviously, AI is an outlier. AI is, you know, way overvalued right now. You can argue that we're only in the first inning, first half of a first inning for AI, so people are willing to overpay. But at the same time, I remember what happened in, you know, 1994, 1995, 1996, and also what happened with mobile internet in 2007, 2008, 2009. You do see a lot of crazy rounds happening at the beginning of a boom. But there will be bifurcation, and there will be companies that end up doing great, and most companies may not be. And so got to still be very thoughtful at choosing which ones has a chance of being around for a long period of time. We do see AI being very hot, other sectors being a lot cooler. In cloud infrastructure, which is a key area that Notable invests, we're still seeing some deals getting done at high valuation for sure. It's still a hot market. In terms of the geography we invest in, you mentioned US, Europe, and Latin America. We also invest in Israel. And Israel, despite the what was going on there, politically, the boom is back in terms of founders' excitement of building great companies intersecting cybersecurity and AI. So we still see a lot of positive development, but for the most part, I still caution founders to not compare themselves with sectors that are doing well or too hot, but really focus on managing their business, their fundamentals. I, for one, am still very bullish on fintech. We can chat more about that later.
Yeah, we'll get into fintech in a minute. But overall, like in terms of your pace of investing, I think last year you had told me it had slowed considerably in 2023 compared to 2022.
Compared to 2021.
Compared to 2021, right. Sorry.
Yeah.
So how is that? How is your pace of investing compared to recent years? Have you slowed down, continued to take your time, and are you investing as much as you were, say, last year or about the same? And how is that comparing to like a couple of years back?
Yeah, I think we're more at 2022 level, so more than 2023. But 2021 is, you know, as an outlier.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So we're not going back that anytime
soon. I really hope not.
I hope not. It's not good for the business.
No.
And it's not good for the ecosystem. And without naming names, you do see firms being impacted by what they were doing in 2021 and make them slow down a lot more now, which is unfortunate because many of them are great investors. They're in great companies. And it's too bad that they cannot participate as a result of just indigestion from 2021.
And well, we were going to kind of get more into the venture world later. So I guess, though, if you can elaborate a little bit what you mean by that, do you mean they kind of overinvested or at too high evaluations and are sort of paying the price now?
Well, the thing is that there are some great companies being invested. I'm not going to name any names, but they raised a large round in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the business is growing, say, not at, you know, 80%, 100% year on year, but they're growing their revenue at about, you know, 40%, 50% year on year. And they can probably go IPO soon in the next year or so from a maturity standpoint and a state standpoint and a revenue-based standpoint. But because the valuation they raised the last round at in 2021 is so high that they're not at that level of valuation in the current public market where the multiples have compressed quite a bit. So even though business-wise, they're ready to go public, valuation-wise, they cannot be getting a higher valuation than what they got back in 2021. So they have to wait. And as a result, the funds that invest in them in 2021 cannot get exits back because there's lack of liquidity, lack of IPO.
Yeah.
And as a result, the LPs who invest in those funds cannot get money back either. So we don't have that recycling of money going back to the LPs and then continue to invest in new funds. So the whole system suffers as a result.
Yeah, that makes sense. These companies are still trying to go into those too high.
Grow into that valuation.
Valuations, yes. That they commanded in 2021.
Right.
Okay. So you're saying, and you, to go back to your point about pace of investing, you said currently it's about more like 2022 than 2023. Does that mean you're investing a little bit more this year compared to last? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
That's good. I mean, AI is definitely happening. So we're thoughtful, but we'll make investments. And then the other areas, whether it's SMB tech, fintech, other applications, even on the consumer internet side, we are seeing things picking up. And we like many companies in our portfolio, like Quince, or even a new younger company like Gorgie with energy drink designed by women for women. And so there are things happening that we like because of what we're seeing on the demand side and also the supply side. Supply chain, there's a lot more innovations going on, a lot more knowledge sharing, data sharing, moving things to the cloud. So suppliers and marketplaces and wholesalers just end up digitizing their transaction. As a result of that digitization or automation of workflows, you end up having more efficiencies and more information sharing across different players in the ecosystem. So you can cut down the working capital needs, you can forecast better, and you just have more visibility on what's going on in the supply chain. And on the demand side, you definitely see the rise of influencers, rise of Gen Z consumers, more women shoppers, more active than ever before. So the casual users, the more of them online, and the following the influencers and compare notes on social media. So you definitely see a lot more things happening than versus, say, 2022 or even 2021 as a result of these innovations. On the fintech side, we're definitely seeing that because of AI and because of just more things moving to the cloud, you definitely see automation and workflows within the office of CFO, whether it's banking services, treasury services, spend management, tax and compliance, AR, AP inventory management, ledgering, reconciliation. There's a lot of things are being digitized and automated in a way that we haven't had before. And that makes it very exciting to be part to be in fintech.
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, fintech is my primary coverage area. And last week, I found a couple of data points that were, I don't want to say discouraging, but just a little sobering, perhaps. For one, funding in the first quarter, according to CB Insights, was at the lowest level it had been since about 2017, is what they found. And also, I was kind of analyzing YC's demo days and realized that it was only about 8% fintech in the winter cohort, whereas a couple of years ago, that was like 24%. So we're talking about one third the representation. Obviously, as you pointed out, AI is kind of the space right now, but still, I was a little surprised that it was a one third of the number of fintech companies, and that funding had dropped to its lowest level in 7 years. What do you think about that? Because I know you're still very bullish on the space.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is just like a little blip? We shouldn't get too worried about it.
I think specifically for fintech, given the high inflationary environment that we had, and a definitely high interest rate that's coming down but not coming down quickly, it is harder for people to get excited about fintech. But if you look at the other set of metrics, financial services as a category, just the public companies, the market cap of all public companies in the banking, insurance, financial service space is over $10 trillion. And of that $10 trillion, only less than 5% are in fintech companies, like a PayPal, like a Block.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we all know that the best fintech companies are growing faster than the FinServ companies, it's just a matter of time that low single-digit penetration in market cap will increase over time. It will have ups and downs. They may not, like e-commerce, not have too many winners, but the ones that can win can have a huge outcome. If I take semiconductor as an example, how many design houses do we know that have done extremely well? You can count that with two hands. It's NVIDIA, it's AMD, it's Intel, it's Marvell, it's ARM. So number of winners may not be as many, but oh my God, who would have thought that even 2 years ago, NVIDIA would be the second biggest market cap company in the world.
Yeah,
so
it's crazy.
I think fintech has that potential to have big winners. It's just that they may not be as many big winners, but the impact of the winners that will make will be tremendous. And as a result, when we look at it, we focus on the thesis on where value is accreting and migrating to. And we're very bullish on the office of the CFO suite, because in this environment, high interest rate and relatively high inflation environment, people want to convert whatever they have, assets they have, into cash as quickly as possible. And as a result, all the functions I mentioned earlier, anything that helps people to do that, pay a little bit slower, convert receivable into cash a little bit quicker, and figure out ways to manage your supply chain so that you can have more visibility and manage your working capital better. All this is only possible through tech and data and AI. So having more transactions already digitized, already online, and leverage AI to automate a lot of workflows, there's a lot of room to generate efficiency in a way that's not possible 2, 3, 4 years ago, even during the boom time in 2021. So I think that as an investor, I'm constantly reminding myself, you know, human emotions do matter. They play a role. But what you don't want to do is buy high and sell low.
Yeah.
And right now, we look at what a Nubank has done in emerging market, what Affirm and Stripe have done in the US, the great companies will end up doing better as a result of this downturn. And they have less competition, you know, holding on to their talent from competitors.
Yeah, I think statistic I had read was that fintechs are growing about 3 times faster than financial services overall. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can speak just from experience covering the space. I think obviously it was oversaturated 2021, 2020. It just everything got to be a little bit too much. Too many of the same types of companies became really hard to differentiate. So, you know, we're just seeing a weeding out. And now the more, I guess, quality players are the ones sticking around and continuing to grow. But now we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, we're talking about Notable Capital and the changing venture landscape.
What's next in tech? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's an innovations paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/TechCrunch.
All right, Hans, last month it was announced that GGV had split into 2 firms, one Granite Asia and one Notable Capital, of which you're heading up, correct, here out of Menlo Park. Can you share a little bit with our audience about the decision behind this? Because GGV Capital was primarily known as a cross-border firm for many years. What drove this decision and what does it mean for you all as investors?
Yeah, GGV has been around for 24 years, since 2020. And it was born as a cross-border venture business, as you mentioned, started in both Silicon Valley and Singapore. I was not part of the founding team, but back then I look at GGV as one of those few firms that was able to have global viewpoints and knowledge. And I always thought that that's kind of cool to be able to know that and have that as an advantage to invest and also to help your founders as well. I joined GGV in the US in 2013 and have been part of the amazing run that the team had. And then in 2023, in September last year, we announced a decision to split, and we completed ahead of time on March 29th this year. And it's definitely bittersweet. I respect my former colleagues in Asia a lot. I think Jixin and Jenny are among the best investors in Asia, and their new firm will be called Granite Asia. For us in the US, we picked a new name, Notable, and we have 4 managing partners. It's Glenn Solomon, who has done an amazing job of growing our cloud infrastructure business, myself, and then Jeff Richards, who focus on vertical software and SMB tech, as well as Oren, who has done an amazing job with investments in Israel and cybersecurity in general. And we have 4 other amazing partners in IR, on platform, and in finance, and other areas who are just superb. So I'm very proud of the team we have here. And we're focusing on investments in the US, in Latin America, in Israel, in Europe, with US being the biggest and Israel being second. And we're seeing a lot of opportunities in cloud infrastructure side, which cover AI as well. And then also on the second bucket, business and consumer applications. And as I mentioned, fintech is part of that, business consumer applications. And so there are a lot of things to do here. And we picked the name Notable because that's, we want to put a focus on the founders. We're investing in notable founders, notable causes, notable ideas, notable people, and even notable investors. So we're proud of what we have going forward, and will be a lot of the continuation of the thesis that we have for these regions here in the US and related areas. And I think that we're set up for success for the next decades to come.
Yeah, some of the companies for our listeners who may not be aware that GGV Capital has invested in over the years include Affirm, Block, Divi Homes, Clara, Rupeek, Turtlemint in India, outside of fintech, Airbnb, Slack, Slice, StockX, Zendesk. One quick question, and I don't know if you can comment, Hans, but how much of this decision was a result of being concerned about tensions between the U.S. and China?
I think the tension's there, and it probably, you could get worse. Definitely a lot more volatility than ever before. I think that's the new normal. And as a result, it makes sense for us to focus on the regions that we want to focus on. So notable, we're not investing in China. We'll only invest in the region that I mentioned, U.S., Europe, LATAM, and Israel. So it's a conscious decision that we made, and we respect that our former colleagues in Asia have their own point of view, which is building a firm by Asians for Asians. And that's totally okay. The world is big, so there's a lot to do. And we have to focus in some ways. So these are the regions and these are sectors that we choose to focus on.
A couple of things I'm hearing about in just the world of venture as a whole is just a lot of movement. In general, I think that there's been talk about how there are operators that became investors and then decided, oh, this isn't as fun as I thought it would be. Let me go back to operating or joining a startup. We saw that with Sam Blon leaving Founders Fund recently. Ryan Peterson, who I think it was also Founders Fund that he went to, and then he went back to Flexport, but I think he's still investing. But anyway, there's kind of musical chairs in the venture world, right? People leaving venture altogether or just going to a different firm or starting their own fund. And as you had mentioned earlier, there's a lot of pressure right now in the VC world because LPs are kind of, I don't want to say freaking out, but like, okay, where are our returns? What do you think is going to happen here? Are you seeing a shift in the world of venture as well?
Venture definitely has ups and downs. What we're seeing, as you know, is that some of the firms choose to be bigger and may even eventually go public, and they're going to be more multi-asset classes. Some of the firms on the other end are going to stay nimble. They'll come out of some of the best companies in Silicon Valley and New York and start their own firm, sometimes sole GP, only one single GP.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the middle, you have operators like Sam. Sam's great. He spent time on a workstream board, and I attended several meetings as well, and I find him to be fantastic, very insightful. I know Ryan from being a small investor in Flexport. So there are going to be a few that can do both, and they will decide at any point in time what's the best role for them. And right now, we are at a point in venture where exits are hard to come by. It used to be, the last 10 years, IPOs, the bull equity market drove a lot of returns. But you also remember days, prior to 2010, where M&A generated most of the exits here in the U.S. I remember those days very well as well. And today, looking back the last 2 years, I see, for example, my portfolio Poshmark that was acquired by Naver after you have gone public first, then acquired by Naver. I see companies where people were asking to buy shares in our private companies, my private portfolio. Some of the names you mentioned as investments made by our firm, I did many of them in it. So I see that interest to buy secondary positions or M&A or some go public, like Ibotta, file for going public. And we've been investors since 2016, 2017. So you see a lot more variety of exit possibilities than before, versus the last almost 10 years, mostly through IPO. So for those of us like yourself, been around for a long time, you see the ups and downs, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I would say I'm surprised by, I guess I have not seen as many acquisitions take place over the past couple of years as I had expected with such a dry IPO market. I had thought we were going to see more M&A activity. I'm a little surprised by that. I do find it interesting that we're seeing more startups, highly valued startups, opt to gain liquidity through secondary sales. Obviously, Stripe has done so more than once.
Right.
There are others in the fintech space, I think, that are going that route as well, like Brex. And I think that for some people, it's a little frustrating. It's like, okay, well, when are they going to go public? I mean, my goodness, like if Stripe can't go public, how can anybody go public? I don't know. The secondary sales, I mean, what do you think about that?
I think that will be a bigger part of the equation going forward. We're even seeing startups trying to facilitate sale of employees options or 10b5 plan kind of equity, whether it's public company or private company. So I think you will see more of that going forward. And there will be investors globally, both here and abroad, that will want have access to some of the best names from here in the U.S., in Silicon Valley, in New York. So I do think that there will be more choices. And during COVID, one of the best things is that other cities start getting more notoriety. You live in Austin, you see the growth of Austin ecosystem. I've seen that for New York and LA and other places. So as a result, more people working remotely, building teams remotely, investors participate in the growth from all over the world. It's just, despite the rhetoric and politics, the world is becoming increasingly more global and more distributed.
Oh, 100%. Well, I guess we need to wrap up, Hans, but I'm so grateful for your time. Always a blast talking to you. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. Can you just give our listeners a sense of where they can find you online? Do you have an X account, or what about your firm?
Yeah, NotableCap is our email address, notablecap.com. And you can email me, hans@notablecap.com, as well as I have an X account, Hans Tong. And also you can look me up on LinkedIn. So we're extremely accessible, both as a firm and also as individual investors. So I was happy to hear from your audience.
I don't think I've ever had a VC give out their email address on equity before. That's brave, but awesome. So thanks for doing that. And you can find us at Equity Pod on X and Threads. We'll be back on Monday, so be sure to join us then. Bye.
Equity is hosted by myself, Alex Wilhelm, and TechCrunch senior reporter, Mary Ann Azevedo. We are produced by Teresa Loconsolo with editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and a big thank you to the audience development team and Henry Picavet, who manages TechCrunch audio products. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.